Hi, this is Kathy, and I'll be reading the Patriot Ledger for Wednesday, April 8th, 2026. Men plead guilty in shooting death. Two men originally charged with murder in the 2022 shooting death of Weymouth High School senior Nathan Paul in Quincy's Germantown neighborhood have pleaded guilty to voluntary manslaughter and other charges. Javion Harris, 22, and Keneal Diaz Romero, 21, appeared before Judge James Boudreau in Norfolk Superior Court in Dedham on Monday, April 6th. Diaz Romeo confessed to firing the shot that fatally wounded Paul, who was 17 at the time of his death on February 13th, 2022. Diaz Romero was sentenced to 15 to 18 years in state prison for voluntary manslaughter. He was given a concurrent 30 to 36 month sentence for unlicensed carry of a firearm. Diaz Romero received 2 years of probation upon release for larceny and using counterfeit money. A charge of conspiracy was dismissed. Diaz Romero fled the state after the killing and was arrested in Puerto Rico in August 2023. He was credited with 921 days, or about 2.5 years of time served. Harris, who confessed to instructing Diaz Romero to shoot Paul, received 6 to 8 years in state prison, followed by 2 years probation for larceny, misleading police, and use of counterfeit money. A charge of conspiracy was dismissed. Harris, who was arrested in 2022, was credited with 1,501 days of time served, meaning he could be released in just under 2 years. Assistant District Attorney Aubrey Burr said during the hearing that Diaz Romero shot Paul at Harris's instruction during a robbery in which the defendants attempted to rob Paul of $500 worth of THC vaping cartridges in Quincy's Germantown neighborhood. Harris, Diaz Romero, and unnamed juvenile co-conspirators lured Paul to Germantown to make the transaction, paying him with counterfeit bills, Burr said. After realizing the deception, Paul drove around the neighborhood in search of the young men, Burr said, eventually confronting Harris, Diaz Romero, and two juveniles. Harris told Diaz Romero to shoot Paul with the gun Harris had given him. The first shot struck Paul, who was still in his vehicle, in the thigh, severing a major artery and leading to his death, Burr said. A second bullet entered the back window at head level but did not strike Paul. Jennifer Sherman, a family friend, spoke on behalf of Nathan Paul's mother, Natasha Paul, described as a single mom raising 5, now 4, children. In her statement read by Sherman, Natasha Paul described her son as a natural-born leader who played football, wrestled, and won Best Dressed as a senior at Weymouth High School. She said she agonized at the thought of her son dying alone and outnumbered after being robbed. If Nathan had died because of an illness, he would have been cared for, the statement said. If it had been an accident, people would have tried to help. We are all tormented at the brutality and terror of what he endured. Paul's younger sister, Brianna Paul, 19, described her older brother as a caring person with a smile that lit up the room. He had dreams, hopes, a whole life ahead of him, she said, all stolen because of a senseless act of violence. Fighting back tears, Brianna Paul tried to imagine the last moments of her brother's life. Was he in pain, she said? What were his final thoughts? Did he think of me? Did he call to the Lord? Did he know he was dying? Addressing Diaz Romero and Harris, Brianna Paul said that while justice in this world is important, there's a higher justice. God sees and hears everything, she said. He knows what happened, the harm you caused. Paul said she hopes the defendants come to a place of repentance, not only with words, but actual remorse. Court hears grisly murder details. Details in the case of a Quincy man charged with murdering his ex-girlfriend include a goodbye phone call, an extremely large amount of blood, and cameras the accused installed to spy on his girlfriend, the prosecutor said. Giovanni Garcia, 34, was arraigned in Dedham's Norfolk Superior Court on Monday, April 8th, pleading not guilty to murder, wiretapping, and strangulation. He was ordered held without bail by Norfolk Superior Court Judge William Sullivan. Police say Garcia strangled Atziri Cardenas Toreros, who ended their relationship, before fatally cutting her throat inside a Quincy apartment at 500 Falls Boulevard on the night of December 13th, 2025. Garcia then attempted to kill himself by cutting his neck, stomach, and wrist with a large knife, according to the police report. Paramedics pronounced Cardenas Toreros dead at the scene. Garcia was transported to Boston Medical Center. Assistant District Attorney Beth McLaughlin told the court that Garcia's sister-in-law went to check on Garcia after listening to an alarming voicemail Garcia left for her husband. "Buddy, I am putting you in charge of the kids, buddy," Garcia said, according to the statement of the case filed by McLaughlin. "Never give up, bro," the message continues, "and always remember that I love you all a lot, dude. I love you all a lot and never give up. There was no other option for me anymore, and take care of yourselves for me, dude." Garcia answered his sister-in-law's knock, covered in blood with cuts on his neck, stomach, and wrist, McLaughlin said. He told his sister-in-law that he killed Cardenas Toreros and he wanted to die, according to McLaughlin. The sister-in-law found the woman's body in the bathroom, slumped over the tub with the shower running, with an extremely large amount of blood in the bathroom and hallway, McLaughlin said. When the sister-in-law returned to the living room, Garcia was trying to slit his own throat with a butcher knife, which the sister-in-law took and threw outside. When police arrived and began giving medical aid, Garcia repeatedly asked them to kill him before losing consciousness, according to McLaughlin. An autopsy found the cause of death to be a laceration from the right earlobe to the left center of the neck, McLaughlin said. Blood in the veins indicate that Cardenas Toreros was alive when she suffered a fatal laceration to her neck, McLaughlin added. McLaughlin said that Garcia and Cardenas Toreros had been in a relationship. When Cardenas Toreros came to the apartment to collect her clothes, Garcia killed her. Garcia suspected his girlfriend of infidelity and secretly installed cameras inside the apartment to spy on her, according to McLaughlin. Footage from the night of December 13th shows Garcia alternatively praying, pacing, and sitting with his head in his hands, the statement of the case says. At one point, he shuts off the cameras, according to the statement of the case. When they're reactivated, Garcia is seen with blood on his legs. He then makes a movement toward the camera, and the feed ends, according to the prosecution. Elliot Levine, the defense attorney representing Garcia, noted that Garcia had slit his throat prior to his sister-in-law's arrival, then again after she came in the apartment. "There was a lot of suicidal ideation at this time and prior to this time," Levine said. The next court date was set for June 3rd for a pretrial conference. Garcia is currently being held at Bridgewater State Hospital. Next chapter living. 55-plus community at former church site taking shape. The first age-restricted condominium community in Braintree is preparing to open its doors to new residents. The plan for the 51-unit Hawthorne Preserve development at the site of the former St. Thomas More Church was approved by the town's planning board in April 2025. Nearly a year later, the first phase at 7 Hawthorne Road is coming together. "It's been a great project," developer George Clements said, adding that it took some work to assuage concerns from the public. "We're excited about it." Clements said 8 of the units are already under contract for purchase. The first phase will consist of 20 units, with sales and occupancy expected to start in mid-May. The second phase should start in mid-October, with the remaining units to be completed throughout 2027. The community for those 55 and older will be a mix of single-family homes, duplexes, and multi-unit townhomes that are about 2,000 square feet. While the units have two stories, they are designed for first-floor living with a main bedroom and laundry room on the first floor. There is also a clubhouse with a steam room and sauna, as well as space for gathering, exercising, and grilling. The first phase townhomes start at $949,000, according to the website. Homeowners Association fees are listed between $400 and $450 per month. St. Thomas More Church closed its doors in 2022 after 82 years, when the Archdiocese of Boston said the church was no longer necessary to meet the community's spiritual needs. Clements worked with community members to offer bricks from the church to parishioners who wanted them, as well as return to families some stained glass windows that were created as memorials. Powder Point Bridge in Duxbury has reopened. The Powder Point Bridge in Duxbury has reopened. The bridge, which connects the mainland to Duxbury Beach, was temporarily closed starting December 8, 2025, due to repairs needed to the bridge structure. The 2,200-foot span reopened to drivers, cyclists, and pedestrians on Friday, April 3rd. The Massachusetts Department of Transportation has put the Powder Point Bridge in line to be replaced. Officials have been working on a design that matches the historic characteristics, which also abides by modern-day structural standards to extend the bridge's lifespan. Department officials most recently held a meeting in February on the $172 million project. Artemis II completes historic flyby of Moon. The Artemis II astronauts are on their way home, leaving the Moon in the rearview mirror after becoming the first humans in more than 50 years to travel near Earth's celestial neighbor, setting an all-time distance record and completing the most important leg of their historic mission. The test flight will pave the way for a possible 2028 moon landing. The Artemis II astronauts traveled farther from Earth than any humans ever have, 252,756 miles according to NASA. The previous record was set in 1970 during the infamous Apollo 13 mission, which reached a distance of 248,655 miles away. The Artemis II astronauts passed that milestone before 2 p.m. Eastern, April 6th, and then went thousands of miles farther, swooping around the far side of the moon. The Orion spacecraft came as close as 4,067 miles to the lunar surface. That altitude allowed the crew to see the full disk of our celestial neighbor as they witnessed lunar sights that no other humans, not even the Apollo astronauts, have experienced in person. During the 7-hour close approach, known as a lunar flyby, the crew, astronauts Reid Wiseman, Christina Koch, and Victor Glover of NASA, as well as Jeremy Hansen of the Canadian Space Agency, made observations of the moon's far side, which is permanently faced away from Earth. They relayed these observations in real time to a global live stream. The crew also came up with two names for craters on the moon, the first in honor of their spacecraft integrity, and the second in honor of Wiseman's late wife, Carol, who died in 2020. To top off an incredible day of space travel, the Artemis II crew witnessed a sublime solar eclipse visible only to them and no one back on Earth. President Donald Trump called in as well, telling the crew they had inspired the entire world. "Humans have never really seen anything quite like what you're doing," Trump said in the 12-minute phone call. "It's really special. America is a frontier nation, and the four brave astronauts of Artemis II really are modern-day pioneers," the president continued, adding, "We're going all out. We'll plant our flag once again, and this time we won't just leave footprints." With all that happening on April 6th, it's no surprise that April 7th was scheduled to be essentially a day off. The astronauts are now making a four-day journey back to Earth using our planet's gravity to naturally slingshot or pull Orion back home, negating the need for propulsion or much fuel. Once Orion blazes through Earth's atmosphere, a protective heat shield will be cast off to make way for parachutes to deploy and slow the vehicle down. The capsule will then make a water landing, likely on April 10th, in the Pacific Ocean near California off the coast of San Diego. Once the craft is in the water, the five orange airbags will inflate around the top of the spacecraft and flip the capsule into an upright position. The crew is expected to exit the vehicle onto a U.S. Navy recovery vessel within about 2 hours. FAA requests to hire 2,300 new air traffic controllers. The Federal Aviation Administration said April 6th it is proposing to hire 2,300 air traffic controller trainees as it works to address a persistent lack of personnel. The FAA is about 3,500 fully certified air traffic controllers short of targeted staffing levels. At the end of September, it employed 13,164 controllers, 6% fewer controllers than it did a decade earlier. Many controllers are working mandatory overtime and 6-day weeks, and the FAA's Air Traffic Control Training Academy faces serious issues with retaining students. The FAA is seeking $95.4 million to bring 2,300 controller trainees on board, up from 2,038 in 2025. The FAA is also seeking $39 million to increase aviation safety oversight and strengthen commercial space transportation oversight, compliance, and enforcement. Congress approved $12.5 billion last year for a rehabilitation of the aging U.S. air traffic control system and to boost hiring. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy recently said he wants another $7 to $10 billion for new software and other tech upgrades. In February, the Department of Transportation's Office of Inspector General said it was investigating the high failure rates among air traffic control trainees. The FAA said in December it lost around 400 to 500 trainees during the government shutdown last fall. Congress earlier this year approved funding to hire 2,500 additional controllers in 2026. The FAA is offering retirement-eligible controllers who are under the mandatory retirement age of 56 a lump sum payment of 20% of their basic pay for each year they continue to work. The FAA has increased starting salaries by 30% for candidates who go to the FAA Training Academy and is speeding time to hire by cutting more than 4 months off the prior process. The FAA is in the process of moving its headquarters into the main Transportation Department building, and the Trump administration wants $60 million to complete the move of thousands of employees. Tesla sits on record number of unsold EVs. Carmaker slashes prices for some models in China. Tesla produced 50,363 more electric vehicles than it was able to sell in the first 3 months of 2026, even with a slight uptick in EV interest becoming apparent amid rising gas prices. The nation's biggest electric car seller reported production of 408,386 cars globally in the first 3 months of 2026, according to an April report released by the company. However, the company said it was only able to sell 358,023 of those cars in the first 3 months of 2026. In South Korea, Tesla saw its car registrations rise 330% to 11,134 vehicles in March from a year earlier, market researcher Kara Hsu said April 6th. Tesla has cut prices for some of its Model Y and Model 3 electric vehicles made in China, sparking price competition among EV makers in Korea. But throughout 2025, Tesla said it produced 1,654,677 EVs and sold 1,636,129, a gap of 18,538 units for the past year. The delta between Tesla's production and sales levels is much higher than the 16,131 vehicle gap the company reported in the fourth quarter of 2025, when Tesla said it produced 434,358 electric cars and sold 418,227. Tesla sold 589,160 cars in the United States in 2025, down 7% from the 633,762 vehicles it sold domestically in 2024. The drop occurred despite the fact that overall EV sales represented 9.6% of U.S. auto sales in 2025, which was only a 0.6% decrease from 2024 levels, according to the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. Tesla attributed the challenges it faced in the United States market in 2025 to near-term uncertainty from shifting trade, tariff, and fiscal policy in a presentation to investors after the third quarter of 2025. Industry analysts also noted the impact of Tesla's CEO Elon Musk's work with President Donald Trump and conservative political stances on the sales performance of the company's cars. The company is also facing increased competitors from other manufacturers who are debuting new models, even as some automakers are pulling back to recent dips in EV demands and the end of federal support for the technology. Double-sided ceasefire. Iran describes deal as humiliating retreat by Trump. President Donald Trump, on April 7th, agreed to a two-week ceasefire with Iran, less than 2 hours before his deadline for Tehran to reopen the Strait of Hormuz or face devastating attacks on its civilian infrastructure. Trump's announcement on social media represented an abrupt turnaround from earlier in the day when he issued an extraordinary warning that a whole civilization will die tonight if his demands were not met. Iran said talks between the United States and Iran would begin on April 10th in Islamabad, Pakistan, whose prime minister helped mediate the ceasefire. Iranian state TV claimed Trump had accepted Iran's terms for ending the war, describing it as a humiliating retreat by the U.S. president. Trump said the last-minute deal was subject to Iran's agreement to pause its blockade of oil and gas supplies through the strait, which typically handles about one-fifth of global oil shipments. Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi said in a statement that Tehran would stop counterattacks and provide safe passage through the Strait of Hormuz. This will be a double-sided ceasefire, Trump wrote on his Truth Social platform. The reason for doing so is that we have already met and exceeded all military objectives and are very far along with a definitive agreement concerning long-term peace with Iran and peace in the Middle East. The war, now in its sixth week, has claimed more than 5,000 lives in nearly a dozen countries, including more than 1,600 civilians in Iran, according to tallies from government sources and human rights groups. Two White House officials confirmed that Israel has also agreed to the two-week ceasefire and to suspend its bombing campaign on Iran. Israeli media reported that the cessation of hostilities would begin once Iran opened the strait and that Israel expected Iranian attacks to continue in the interim. A few minutes after Trump's announcement, the Israeli military said it identified missiles launched from Iran toward Israel. Trump, who has issued a series of threats in recent weeks only to back away, said progress between the two sides had prompted him to agree to the ceasefire. He said Iran had presented a 10-point proposal that was a workable basis for negotiations and that he expected an agreement to be finalized and consummated during the two-week window. Markets breathed a sigh of relief, with U.S. stock futures rising in the minutes following Trump's message. Oil prices fell sharply, with U.S. crude futures dropping more than 17% to just over $92 a barrel. Trump's announcement capped a whirlwind day that was dominated by his threat to destroy every bridge and power plant in Iran unless Tehran reopened the strait. That unnerved world leaders, rattled global financial and energy markets, and drew widespread condemnation, including criticism from the head of the United Nations and Pope Leo. Some international law experts have said attacking civilian infrastructure indiscriminately could constitute a war crime. The closure of the strait, through which almost a fifth of the world's oil supply typically travels, has sharply increased oil prices, escalating the chances of a global economic downturn or even recession. The U.S. Energy Information Administration earlier on April 7th warned that fuel prices could continue to rise for months even after the strait reopened. With the U.S. midterm election campaign ramping up, Trump's approval ratings have hit their lowest level ever, leaving his Republican Party at risk of losing its grip on Congress. Polls show sizable majorities of Americans opposed to the war and frustrated by the rising cost of gasoline. As the clock ticked down to Trump's 8 p.m. Eastern deadline, U.S. and Israeli strikes on Iran had intensified, hitting railway and road bridges, an airport, and a petrochemical plant. U.S. forces attacked targets on Karg Island, home to Iran's main oil export terminal. Over 800 arrested through TSA tips. ICE given records on thousands of travelers. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement arrested more than 800 people following tips shared by federal airport security officials from the start of Donald Trump's presidency through February 2026, internal ICE data reviewed by Reuters show, a figure far above what was previously publicly known. The leads came from the Transportation Security Administration, which supplied ICE with records on more than 31,000 travelers for possible immigration enforcement, the data showed. Reuters could not determine how many arrests took place inside airports, although the TSA tips would mainly be useful in determining when a person would be traveling. ICE and TSA are part of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. The agencies have historically shared information related to national security threats, but they began focusing on routine immigration arrests last year as part of Trump's mass deportation effort. The 31,000 traveler records were gathered by TSA's Secure Flight Program, which was created in 2007 to allow the agency to review passenger information for people who may be on U.S. government watch lists. The program was intended as a counterterrorism measure, not to track down immigration offenders according to the regulation outlining its purpose. DHS did not respond to questions about TSA providing passenger information to ICE, but said that under Trump, TSA is pursuing solutions that improve resiliency, security, and efficiency across our entire system. Figures for arrests and traveler records that TSA shared with ICE before Trump's current term were unavailable. U.S. airports and immigration enforcement have been at the center of a partisan funding fight since mid-February when Democrats refused to support additional money for the Republican president's immigration crackdown without reforms to scale back aggressive tactics. The standoff blocked the passage of a bill to fund DHS, which caused TSA security officers to miss at least 2 full paychecks. After some unpaid TSA officers began calling in sick, Trump deployed ICE officers to more than a dozen airports in March to aid security efforts. Democrats have criticized the deployment and called on the Trump administration to remove them. A group of more than 40 Democrats in the U.S. House of Representatives wrote in a letter to recently installed Homeland Security Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen last week that ICE officers will cause confusion and fear if allowed to remain in airports. Several cases of ICE officers arresting travelers in airports have sparked backlash. ICE officers detained a college student traveling from Boston to Texas to celebrate Thanksgiving in November and arrested a sobbing mother at San Francisco International Airport the day before Trump's airport deployment began. DHS defended both arrests and said they were subject to final orders of removal. Reuters spoke with 3 immigration attorneys who said they were familiar with cases of people without legal immigration status being arrested in airports. The cases included an Irish couple who had lived in the United States for more than 2 decades and were detained last summer by immigration authorities in front of their children when trying to fly from Florida to New York after a vacation, Christina Canty, one of the lawyers, said. The parents, who had pending applications for permanent residency, were deported and left their 2 young children, ages 7 and 10, with adult siblings in the United States, Canty said. In another case, a Chinese woman with a final order of removal who was seeking permanent residence was detained by ICE last year at the Atlanta airport en route to Philadelphia, one of the attorneys said.